The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 7th of July, 2020. On the podcast today, Mike Ralston, Chief Executive Officer of Blaine Cow Resources, BRES, the ticker there. And Mike talks about operational progress, also the demand and supply chains of the lithium iron battery market. Plus, Roger Bullen, Chief Executive Officer of Roslyn Data Technologies, RDT, is the ticker there. And Roger discusses the business and their growth strategy following their recent fundraise. Quite impressive that was too. Also, Stephen Poulton, Chief Executive Officer of Alta Strategies, ALS, the ticker there, explains the business model, discusses recent news and upcoming milestones. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. And you can also check out our COVID-19 index there and lots of stories on the front page. Let's check out the COVID-19 index. Biggest riser today, again, second day in a row, is Gfinity. G-F-I-N, up 16%. This is following a 25% uplift yesterday. And, of course, I did a video on them on the weekend. And biggest fall of the day is Totally PLC. Hopefully we'll get the guys on the podcast there, their final results. So it's down 10%. So check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Mike Ralston, CEO of Blaine Cow Resources. That's BRES ticker there. Mike, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thank you very much for having me again.
That's no problem. Now, we're going to talk about, obviously, you and also maybe look at the bigger picture here, because we all know every government in the world pretty much have banned the sale of diesel and petrol at a certain date in time. So we have this backstop where there's going to be massive demand for electric vehicles. And of course, we have to supply the sort of commodities that work in those batteries. We're going to have a look at that and where you're placed in that. But before we do, as always, Mike, for someone not familiar with Blaine Cow Resources, just give them a background as to what you're all about, please.
Thanks, Justin. Blaine Cow Resources, ticker BRES, on the London Stock Exchange. We've got a super large graphite project, flake graphite project in Uganda, in Africa, East Africa. It's a sensational project. We believe it's going to turn into one of the very large and very exceptional graphite projects going forward. We're in the process of drilling it to a JORC resource, and thereafter we're going to move to a feasibility study stage.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's look at some. So we all know there's this massive amount of demand about, you know, and it's starting to happen now. I mean, it's a wedge, I suppose, but we are the thin end of the wedge right now. But there's going to be massive demand from USA, from Europe. Take us through that, Mike. You know, what's going to be the issue here? I mean, is the supply geared up to meet this demand in America and in Europe?
Well, let's start with demand before we attack supply, because obviously that's one side of the equation. Yes, there's massive predictions in terms of what's going to happen in the electric vehicle explosion. People are talking about exponential growth. Huge numbers have been bandied around for a long time. I think it's fair to say that to date they haven't quite achieved on the ground what's been thrown around as forecasts, and everyone would say it's lagging a little bit, and that's understandable. It's new technology. It's a very new concept for people to go out and buy a car that's electric. You've got to obviously be able to go and charge it somewhere, and they're not readily available. Certainly the prices have been prohibitive, although they are coming down at the moment. So there's definitely a newness to this, and it's created some lag. But at the same time, as you pointed out a minute ago, there's considerable push from governments. It's got a lot to do with the environmentally friendly push, because obviously the electric vehicles are going to be running off something different to the fossil fuels and not creating the emissions, etc. So I think there's huge pressure that's going to come to bear on the industry going forward. And we're already seeing that. Almost every single auto manufacturer has got incredible targets in terms of the electrification. Generally starting from the sort of 2025s going onwards, but certainly by 2030 going forward, they're talking about literally cutting back to a very small amount of petrol diesel vehicles going forward. So we're expecting that that demand is going to come through over the course of the next couple of years. And just to carry it backwards, I suppose, into our field, and just to put to I suppose join the dots, electric vehicles, the technology at this stage, and obviously technology does change, but according to Simon Moores, who's the managing director of Benchmark Minerals Intelligence, one of the leading analysts in battery metals in the world today, lithium-ion batteries are going to be the core platform technology for the 21st century. They allow energy to be stored in electric vehicles and other renewables. So electric vehicles are going to be run off lithium-ion batteries. Lithium-ion batteries have two parts to them, the cathode and the anode. And the anode is where graphite is about 50% of the makeup in terms of weight, approximately 30 to 60 kgs per battery for an electric vehicle. So if you can join the dots, as I said, you're running forward with demand for electric vehicles, going forward into lithium-ion batteries. The anode manufacturing that goes into the lithium-ion batteries is made up largely of graphite. And so as we wind back towards the core material, or one of the core materials within this electric vehicle explosion, will be graphite, and specifically flake graphite, which is what we've got at our Aurum Cross project. And that's what makes it all so interesting in terms of the demand side of the equation. And does that make sense? Have I explained that carefully?
Yeah, absolutely. And graphite's obviously a big element of it. And so how are they, you know, how are people geared up? How are continents geared up to supply this graphite? Are they, I mean, is it there? Can they do it? Or will they have to look elsewhere, for example? I mean, Europe, do they have enough, commodity there to put into their plants? What's the state of play at the moment?
Again, a very interesting point you raise. And some of the statistics that have come out of this BMI transcript, this recent webinar that I was listening to, China is producing one megafactory, which produces literally huge quantities of these lithium-ion batteries. They are producing one megafactory per week, wow, whereas the United States are producing one every 4 months. So since 2017, China has moved from 9 megafactories to 107, of which 53 are active at the moment, and the USA has moved from 3 up to 9, of which there are still only 3 that are active. So clearly China is leading the way. And when it goes back one step from the batteries, from the battery manufacturing plants to the anode manufacturing, in fact, USA doesn't even have any plants. 85% of all anode manufacturing is happening in China, 48 plants, I believe, with a small amount happening in Europe. So China is leading the way, and I think this is starting to create some issues. Certainly over the last couple of months, as we've become very COVID aware, the world has started getting a little bit nervous about over-reliance on China. Mm-hmm. We've obviously read about Donald Trump and China having their trade wars, and there's issues there as well. So I believe that there's going to be a sway, not necessarily tomorrow, but over the next forthcoming years, that pushes a lot more battery manufacturing, and behind it, the anode manufacturing, into Europe and into the United States, as they try to play catch up so that they can control their own destiny when it comes to electric vehicles, when it comes to lithium-ion batteries.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you can see that already. Trump is pushing hard for non-reliance on China and go elsewhere. And I think a lot of the countries are following suit. So essentially, what about Europe then? I mean, will they be self-reliant, or will they have to look to Africa?
Well,
for example?
Self-reliance is interesting, because it's going to take them a long time to get up to even the levels of China today, and we've got a very small electric vehicle numbers on the roads at the moment. So obviously as that starts to grow, everything has to grow with it. So it's going to take a long time for them to become self-reliant. But Europe is starting to make moves. There's definitely moves from VW, from Peugeot on the continent, where they're starting to create relationships and joint ventures with big battery manufacturing companies in order to get their own technology and their own know-how and ultimately their own manufacturing up to speed. But it will take a long time, because they're starting from scratch. They've literally way behind the curve in terms of where China is. And not only have they got to play catch up, but they're going to be doing it within a market that itself is growing very quickly, as we've just discussed. So it's going to take them a long time. And with that, I think you're going to find there's a lot of pressure as they start to try and move quicker and different relationships are formed. So I believe there's going to be a lot of action in this space. But then when you move across to the supply side, which is asking the question, if this electric vehicle explosion and the exponential growth is going to happen over the next 5-10 years, and it doesn't just stop there, it just continues to grow. That's what exponential is all about. Where are they going to get their core materials from? At the moment, there's an enormous amount of perception out there that graphite is in great abundance all over the world. It can be found within many different projects in many different countries. But at the same time, it's our belief, and certainly it's the belief of experts such as BMI, that an enormous number of these graphite projects that are literally sitting out there in various stages of early stage right through to pre-production, and a great number of these, a great percentage of these, are going to struggle to ultimately achieve production. And why is that? A couple of reasons. First reason, a lot of them in very high-risk locations. Some of the countries, Madagascar, Mozambique, Tanzania, these are countries where it's very difficult to do business. I'm not saying that they cannot do it. I'm saying it will be difficult. And all of them in those locations are going to struggle, going to find it difficult, and some of them, certainly we believe a great number, will not make it into production. Second reason, at the moment anyway, graphite is not sold anywhere other than spot market pricing, so forward pricing is unavailable, and therefore, as you go out to try and find debt financing, you can't do it only on a spot price. They want to lock in more security, the debt providers, and therefore arranging finance for your project is going to be challenging. It is challenging, and it will continue to be challenging going forward. Again, another reason why a number of these graphite projects may never see it into production. So whilst there's huge quantities of graphite all over the world, a lot of the projects may not make it into production. And then the other side of that supply discussion is the specific types of graphite that are used for the lithium-ion batteries, for the anodes, is a very particular type of flake graphite that's required. And it's not just any old project has got it, therefore any old project can supply it. So there's going to be a squeeze on the supply side. And from that, we believe there's going to be a lot of downstream, or from our case, upstream parties that are very closely linked into the whole electric vehicle market, whether they be auto manufacturers that have come together with battery manufacturers, ultimately anode manufacturers. They're going to be searching for continuity of supply, and that's the highest quality of product that can be supplied in a low-risk location and from projects that have a consistency of product that can be obviously taken over a long period of time in terms of mine life. And those particular projects are going to get a huge amount of kudos, and obviously as people start to diversify their supply chains, they're going to become the most prominent. So the demand side and the supply side are both two very important aspects to this particular product, graphite, and obviously very, very important to us.
Now, one final thing then. I mean, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here, and like I said, there's a sort of, we mentioned there's a wedge here of demand. Where is your project placed time-wise to deliver and supply this kind of, this high-quality graphite?
Well, we're based in northern Uganda, which is a very safe location. Politically speaking, economically speaking, Uganda is certainly one of the safer locations across Africa. Mm-hmm. We're going to be producing we've got a huge deposit that can literally produce an enormous amount of graphite. We're obviously going to tailor-made our supply and our production according to how much we can sell, and that can shift accordingly as demand shifts over the years. But very interestingly, we'll be able to produce a high-quality product at a very low operating cost. And those are the key components in terms of producing any viable commercial mining project. And so we believe that Blenko's got something very unique. And I guess we're sort of positioning ourselves with a view towards that demand-supply imbalance that I've just been talking about. We think that we can get into production in about 3 years, around about 2024, maybe 4 years' time. And that should be around about the time when this imbalance starts to really rear and to show its head, and really that could create prices to move up quite considerably and obviously make the project quite viable going forward. So, it's a very interesting area. It's not as well known as some of the other gold and precious and base metals, but it's extremely interesting. And for those of your listeners that are interested in this electric vehicle space in particular, it's incredibly important to understand the demand-supply fundamentals that go with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, well, that's very interesting. Mike, if you could then, for people, just in summary maybe to your project and what's going on and the bigger picture, if people are listening and like the sound of what you're doing there and the position you're at and where you're positioned, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, the first one is what I've just explained in terms of the macro situation, the demand, supply, and where it's all going. And obviously, the product itself will be in huge demand going forward and a shortage of supply as we see it. The second one is that we've got an enormous deposit, a huge project with great fundamentals in terms of low mining costs, the ability to take a high-quality product and get it to market. The third one is that we've got a very strong management team. We haven't touched on that in this particular discussion, but we've got a lot of African experience. We've got a lot of experience developing projects into production, raising money, which is obviously one of the key aspects I mentioned earlier. And I think that we can do what we've got to do in terms of bringing Aurum Cross into production going forward.
Mm-hmm. All the stuff. Mike, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Roger Bullen, Chief Executive Officer of Roslyn Data Technologies. RDT is the ticker there. Roger, thanks for joining me.
No problem, Justin. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, I've been watching your story with interest since Paul Hill came on the podcast and I chat to Paul once every sort of Friday about his thoughts on the market, because he's a full-time investor and equity analyst, and he's a big fan of you, and I'm watching closely. So I know a bit about the story, but for people not familiar with Roslyn Data Technologies, Roger, could you just summarise what the business is about, please?
Yeah, sure. So Roslyn, we enable procurement, finance, risk, compliance departments within an organization really to leverage the data that they hold in their ERP, their finance, and their operating systems, allowing them to join that data together in a unified form, and then to enrich it with other external data that can either be gathered from websites that are, you know, public domain, or from third-party data that they've bought in, enabling them to provide real improved insights and increase the value that they really can bring to their own organisation.
Yeah, yeah. Can you give us an example of a company? How would this help them? Give me an example of a country in a certain industry. How would this help?
Well, I was actually going on to say, so the platform uses full, you know, robotic process automation and AI, mm-hmm. and enables businesses to collect all the data together, cleanse it, enrich it, categorize the data, and then visualize it and pay it back within the organization, ensuring that it's very accurate, that it can be trusted, it's compliant with all the government and corporate requirements, regulatory and otherwise, and that there's no discrepancies between the departments, the business units, or the countries.
Yeah.
All of them basically have access to the full data suite. We've basically created a golden record that can be used across the organization. And yeah, it really ensures that the systems are all talking to each other, that there's no duplication of effort, that value is really able to be seen. And I think importantly that we can read and write to and from all the systems that are used within an organization. So you're removing a lot of operational duplication. You're making sure that everything is efficient, or as efficient as it can be. And you're optimizing that compliance criteria and not overstating and, you know, overcosting the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Now let's go back to some news, because I was astonished a while back. I mean, you did a cracking fundraise. And, you know, most people worry about fundraisers is for small cap companies or micro cap companies, that they will be heavily discounted and not a lot raised, almost too much raised, a massive discount. But you raise, just 7.3 million, which was 43% of the enlarged share capital, at a 20% of premium, or 22% premium to the 20-day volume weighted average of the share price, which is like unheard of at your size. How did you achieve this?
Well, it was a lot of hard work, to be honest. And we decided that we were going to raise a small amount of money. Mm. That was our intention, purely because we were in the early days of COVID. No one really knew the impact on it, And we were looking at our future revenue streams and when our clients pay. And one or two clients were give us quite lumpy chunks of cash. And if those were to be deferred by 60, 90 days, it could have had a dramatic impact on the business. So we wanted to remove any real cash flow impact and issues that we could be suffering. Fortunately, when we went to market, we had a very good story to tell. The presentation was well put together. Ash Mehta and I, Ash the CFO, we presented to a high, a large number of investors, all remotely, over Teams. It was an exceptional experience. We did 27 meetings in 3 days, unheard of in reality. But it was very good. And being able to raise significantly more than we actually asked for was a surprise to us, but also gratefully received. We were able to increase the share price, or the price that we did the issue at. And it went down extremely well.
Yeah. Well, it must have been an excellent presentation and put over very well, because, like I said, that kind of, that's a premium fundraise for a small cap and a big chunk of money. That's very impressive. And, a lot of people bought into it, obviously. You can tell that. So, well done that. So, I mean, what I like about your business and what they probably liked, I'm just putting words in their mouth, but I assume it's because your software as a service, it's high recurring revenues, and you've had some contract extensions. And that's, I mean, a lot of companies would love to achieve that and to explain to people to understand why it's so significant, I suppose, because every year you're not starting from zero. You're already starting with revenue, aren't you? So, and you've had some contract extensions already, haven't you, recently?
Yeah, so we announced some real blue chip renewals. And it's good to see our client base not renewing just for a 1 year period, but for multi years. Yeah, gives us real confidence. Not only is it good for the backlog, the revenues, and the ARR, but it's actually good for morale across the team. It says that our products are resilient, that the clients are seeing tremendous value from them. They're having faith and trust in the product going forward, and that the service levels that we're actually achieving are actually meeting all of their needs. Yeah. Someone signing up for 3 year a third time renewal of 3 years just shows the longevity of the product, the capability, and the payback for the investment we've made in the product over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's talk about COVID, because it affected many businesses. And I suppose with you, it's maybe a bit different, because people, contract your services and your software to save them money. So how's it working out for you? What's the impact? What has it had on you as a business?
Well, I mean, you're right. COVID's had a huge impact on a number of organisations. And, we've got airlines and, retail outlets who are our client base. So, it significantly impacted them. Mm. I think the impact that COVID has shown in the short term has been predominantly transactional. Mm. But in the future, I think it's going to have a dramatic impact where people are going to need to actually really look at how they can transform their business and digitize it and make the procurement and supply chain more resilient. Roslyn's client base is predominantly large multinational organizations. And they really need to leverage all of the data that's available to them, both from their internal and their external systems. They've not done that incredibly well over the last few years. But when we released our COVID dashboard I think it was 2 days after, you know, we went into lockdown, we were able to demonstrate to our clients and show them which of their suppliers could be impacted with the virus next, what they could do about it, how they could prioritize talking to those clients, making sure that that supply chain was resilient. Yeah, and we did that by using their data that we cleansed, enriched and categorized, but then overlaying it with the COVID data that was being made freely available by Johns Hopkins University, showing where the spread of the virus was going global and how it was creeping around from east to west and, you know, south, etc., and pinpointing, geolocating where their clients were, or sorry, their suppliers were, so that they could start talking to those suppliers, start negotiating for, you know, either deferral of payment or a slowing down of supplies, or where needed, that supplies could be moved to another location from that supplier so that their businesses weren't impacted. And that had a dramatic impact on our clients. And we actually saw the usage of our solution go up dramatically, certainly within the first 7 to 10 days of our dashboard being launched. And clients asking us if we could actually refresh that dashboard more frequently than the daily basis we were doing that.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. I did read that update on that. It was quite impressive, the amount of data you're putting forward, putting out there for your clients. And I suppose, in some respects, certain companies, like you say, who were not using their data smartly, you know, will probably review that kind of business, because I suppose a lot of businesses now are under review, aren't they? I mean, they know, they're laying off staff where they can, and they look at their cost structures, you know, very closely. So I suppose that they must be aware that some of their data and how they can use their data isn't up to scratch, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's right. You know, so organisations have now, you know, we hope, seen the need and hopefully understood the importance of the resilience within the supply chain. Mm. Yeah, we've enabled our clients not only to achieve this, but to report on this, visualize this, and rapidly make changes whenever required, enabling them to reduce costs, become more efficient, more effective, and being a real value engine within their organization.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, part of the use of proceeds for your fundraise, like I said, you've got a lot of recurring revenue. Is it up to 80% recurring? Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we target to get to around 75, but this year you're slightly ahead of that. We're being a bit cautious on our forecast purely because of the impact of COVID, yeah, and what that could do to the business going forward.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, a massive percentage is recurring revenue, and of course that's good. But you say, you know, in your sort of fundraise article, RNS here, that you want to increase sales and marketing effort to accelerate growth. So explain how you're going to do this. How are you going to expand that top line?
Yeah, so the majority of the funds were always going to be used for, you know, expanding our sales and marketing team. Yeah, and we're currently going through the process now of bringing on board a chief revenue officer. Mm. Yeah, something that we expect to close out within the next couple of months for certain. And then we're also building out the sales team further. Yeah, we're already well operationally geared. So, you know, bringing on or adding top line revenue isn't going to really make a lot of difference to our underlying cost base. You know, the gross margin is, you know, around the 80% mark, and we're pushing that up all the time we can. But yeah, you know, in reality, if we had more feet on the street, more people out there pushing our product and selling our product, and the fundraise gave us the funds to enable that to happen, we'll be increasing that top line, increasing that ARR, and hopefully driving forward, you know, in the not too distant future. At the same time, we are looking for acquisitions. Yeah, we've onboarded two acquisitions in the last three years very successfully and, you know, pretty rapidly, and we intend to do that again. You know, I'd like to get an acquisition under our belt within this calendar year, but obviously that acquisition has to be aligned with our strategic goals, meet the criteria and the objectives we've set for our acquisitions.
Yeah, well, of course, I mean, a couple of ways to grow, like you say, acquisitions and organically, and you know, in this environment at the moment, like you said there, even if you get more salespeople on board, you've got, obviously got a great product, but companies, like you say, are trying to cut back on costs. And even though you could help save them money, how receptive do you think companies will be in this environment to, pay for your services?
We're actually seeing quite a lot of throughput. So, I think companies are now realizing that they do need to do something. The COVID-19 experience has emphasized the need for resilience in procurement and how they deal with that. Being able to add value to an organization, create that resilience, make sure that your supply chain is secure, locked in, and that the organization globally is benefiting from the economies of scale. It's always going to be a tenuous point whether you can get procurement to pay, or whether it's an IT investment and those sort of things, and budgets will be limited. But if you've got the right story and you can prove, and you've got the clientele that is able to reference how you've achieved it for them, the door is always open, and our job really is to keep pushing on that door, and bring that sales level in.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said the acquisitions, you're hoping to do one, are you already got your eyes on a few, or you haven't found anything yet, or where are you with that?
We're looking at the moment. We've got two or three that are of a significant interest. We want it to be of a decent enough size. We don't really want to be a small acquisition. We want it to be something that's material for the organisation. So we don't have anything in the pipeline hard and fast at this moment in time, but we'll continue to look in the short term, and hopefully we'll get something lined up by the end of August, maybe September.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Roger, on the podcast every day, I highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets platform. And to get on that list, someone has hit that follow button, or several people. So if someone's listening to this right now, likes the sound of what you're doing, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, could you give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button, add Roslyn Data Technologies to their watch list, please?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, we're a data technology company that's EBITDA positive. We have an ARR represents more than 75% of next year's revenue, and we've got funding behind us that enables us to grow. Our platform is fully developed, it's fully operational, and it will continue to be at the cutting edge. Yeah. And I think most importantly, the COVID experience has shown how digitization can transform the way a business works. A digital transformation is needed in procurement, compliance and risk departments, all of which need to work together and share the same data. I really hope that organisations have understood the importance of resilience within the supply chain. COVID has proved that. Roslyn enables our clients not only to achieve this, but also to report on this, visualise it and make them a value engine within an organisation. And really, that's what every part and every department wants to be, to add real value to their organisation, being more efficient, more effective, reducing costs and delivering better EBITDA for their organisation.
Excellent stuff. Roger, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Poulton, Chief Executive Officer of Altus Strategies. ALS is a ticker there. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Justin, thank you for the call. Pleasure to speak with you.
Yes, nice to get you on. A new company. I've never heard of you before. So it's at the start of every podcast, I ask anyway for a summary. So sometimes it helps the listener. Sometimes I know about the company, but I don't know too much about you. So it's nice to have this summary. So for people and me who are not familiar with the company, please explain what Altus Strategies is all about, please, Stephen.
Pleasure to. Well, Altus is in the natural resources sector. We are a mining royalty generator. And it's a pretty unique business. We're listed in both London and on the Canadian market. And our business is to basically generate mining royalties. And we do that through discovery, and we do it also through acquisition.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. And so for people, not familiar with mining and royalties, what is a royalty, for example? Can you explain what that is?
Well, really, a royalty is the sweet spot of the mining sector, because what it is you own the rights to the cash flow from producing mines, but you're not obliged to pay for any of the liabilities of operating or running the mine. And often mines go on for much longer than they're expected to once they're first opened. Yeah. And these royalties can continue to pay very considerable amounts of money to the owners of the royalties. That means that sometimes they can be quite expensive. So while you can acquire royalties, we also think there's huge value in actually making the discovery of the original asset and owning a royalty on that project through its life.
Yeah. Okay. And as far as investments or projects at the moment, how many have you got?
Well, broadly, we have about 20 projects and royalties. Our focus on Africa. It's a continent which is vastly underexplored and has huge potential for discoveries. Our team is primarily a technical team, and we founded ourselves and remained private for many years. We started off in 2007, and we only listed on the AIM market in 2017 and then in Canada in 2018. So we've got a very long track record and a very well-established shareholder base. Really, our investors are accustomed to the mining sector. You could classify them perhaps as sophisticated investors who understand the exploration business and understand the royalty business. And really, I can't emphasize enough how valuable it is to capture those two sweet spots within our sector of discovery and royalties. Yeah. And some of your listeners may have had fantastic returns investing in exploration companies that have been successful. And Altus has a number of discoveries right now which look very promising indeed. But also, they may become more familiar with the idea of investing in royalty companies because people are understanding the fantastic year-on-year returns that these companies can make and the huge leverage they have to these projects that the royalty sits on and the cash flows that come from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's dig into your last bit of news. You announced significant gold resources at Diba project in Mali. Can you take us through the detail here, please, Stephen?
Yeah, certainly. Diba is a project located in Western Mali. It's a gold asset. We acquired the asset when we did a combination with a Canadian company called Legend Gold in 2018 as a portfolio of gold assets in Mali. And Diba is located very strategically about 13 kilometres from a world-class gold mine called Sadiola, which has had over 10 million ounces of gold mined from it in the past. What we did when we acquired Legend is they had previously had a resource on this licence, but it had gone historic, basically, as deemed by the TSXV. And so we've refreshed the technical report, had Mining Plus, a group of UK consultants, look at the asset and put in all of the technical data to generate a new resource statement. And we're very pleased with the outcome, actually. It's come back at combined indicated inferred of over 400,000 ounces of gold. And Diba, the Diba project, or Diba Hill as it is just one of eight prospects and targets on the Diba license. So we're very excited by this. We do believe there's huge potential for the Diba resource to grow and hopefully build a standalone gold operation on that location.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're obviously doing quite well. You've attracted the attention of quite a big investor, La Mancha. Can you explain this investment and explain for people who don't know who they are?
Well, happy to. And I guess Altus has been a little bit under the radar for the last 2.5 years since we listed on the AIM market, but we've been exceptionally busy during this period. And La Mancha spent quite some time doing their due diligence on Altus before they invested in us. And so we were delighted to receive their investment. It's a very strong endorsement of our business model and our team. And La Mancha as a group, it's a private investment house. They have primarily three listed investments, of which we are one. Their other two investments are into Endeavour Mining and Golden Star Mining, two very successful Africa-focused gold mining companies. And to put things into perspective, the investment that they have in Endeavour, for example, is around about $900 million Canadian dollars in value. Their investment in Golden Star, is around about $100 million Canadian in value. And their investment in Altus is around about $8 million. Of all of the companies in the exploration space, La Mancha have invested in Altus, I think very much because they believe in our team, they believe in the assets that we've assembled, and they believe in our growth potential. And that comes from our diversified approach with 20 assets across Africa with a focus on gold, on exploration discovery, and also our deep commitment to have exposure to the cash flows from royalties on the various projects that we have, as well as other projects that we may seek to acquire in the future. And so there's a very strong alignment of interests. In February of this year, they acquired a 35% stake in the business, and their CEO has joined our board. And so it's a very strong endorsement, but the story in the news has really gone under the radar.
Yeah. I mean, you must have been felt quite excited by that when you first heard about this, yeah, and they contacted you.
Well, yes, and we knew some of the principals who were there, and as a group, we had always thought that it would be good to be in a position where we have a very strong cornerstone shareholder who understands, has a very profound understanding of the African mining space to support us in our endeavours, because really we are looking to build a very substantial business here. We've been very diligent in the way we've gone about things, and we've been successful despite what have been previous to now 10 very difficult years, or at least 9 very difficult years for the sector. And notwithstanding that difficulty, we've succeeded. We've secured La Mancha as an investor. We're very much on the same page as them, and perhaps one of the underlying reasons that we have been successful so far is because the management have over a 20% shareholding in the company still. And that's because they're all investors in the business, yeah. The board and the management, I must say. And that alignment of interest with our shareholders, I think, is fundamentally an important thing that all investors should look for. Are the management and is the board putting their money where their mouth is?
Yeah. Do you know what? I always look for that in small cap companies, definitely. Okay, so and if someone in a few minutes' time, Stephen, I'm going to ask you the three reasons why someone should add you to their watch list. If they do that, what's the kind of milestones, kind of news they can expect from you in the next, say, 6-12 months?
Well, we're looking forward to a very busy 6 or 12 months ahead, and I guess the first cab off the rank, as they say, is our preliminary economic assessment that we're undertaking on the Diba asset. Notwithstanding that we believe that Diba has considerable growth potential, and we are anticipating undertaking drilling on that asset in the next few months, we have commissioned Mining Plus to undertake a scoping study, or a PEA as it's called, on Diba, to give an idea of what the current economics will be for that asset. Now, we've got 400,000 ounces of resource currently. It's on a hill. It should have a very low stripping ratio. We are expecting some very good news to come from that. We'll have to wait and see. But that will be the first news that investors should hopefully be able to look forward to, is a sense and understanding of what the economics of the asset will be. I would be surprised if it doesn't show a very good number. And also, I believe that it will put into context our current valuation, which is only around about £22 million, into perspective. After that, we're looking at a number of opportunities, potential transactions and deals, and one or more of those may come off as we seek to increase our exposure to royalties. Obviously, our investors and our shareholders, which not also including La Mancha, but other investors such as Sprott and other regarded resource investors are backing us in order to grow the company. So there may be some elements that shareholders can look forward to in ways for the company that might grow through acquisitions. And of course, underlying everything, with 20 assets and a growing portfolio of assets, they can continuously look forward to news of various discoveries that we're making on all of our projects across the portfolio. And it's perhaps remiss of me to have not said that the company is not just active in Mali, but also in Ethiopia, in Cameroon, in Morocco and in Ivory Coast. And if your listeners look back at some of our news flow from the last 6 or 12 months, and they can project forward what might be coming, then hopefully they will see a lot of news in the pipeline. We tend to do transactions with third parties to finance the middle stage. So as I mentioned at the beginning, we're focused on discovery and we're focused on royalties, I guess the beginning and the end part of the cycle. But the element in the middle, which is the building of mines and the operating of mines, we tend to outsource to third parties, and we do transactions to cover those costs. And so there'll be news from our partners on our projects. One of those partners is a group called Graphex Mining, an Australian listed company. We expect them to be announcing some drilling results on a couple of our gold projects in Mali in the next few months, which we hope to be quite exciting. And they will also hopefully come out with a new resource statement on an asset called the Tabakoroli project. We also have a deal with a group called Canyon Resources on a bauxite asset in Cameroon. And we're expecting this year to receive another 10 million in shares of Canyon Resources, which will be good for our balance sheet. And you know, I could go on. There will be a lot of news for investors, and investors are looking for a dynamic company, then they don't need to look much further than Altus, I would say.
Yeah, well, listen, I was going to ask you for three reasons. I think we could say news flow is one reason, but give us another two reasons why then, Stephen, if someone's listening to this right now, likes the sound of what you're doing but not yet following the story, why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think I'll try and be more succinct with the second one, which is that we believe we've got the perfect business model at the perfect time. Mm-hmm. And investors should be looking at the gold space. They should be looking at precious metals. They should be looking at management teams that have a track record in making discoveries and selling companies and selling assets, which our board does have. And they should be trying to work out what is the smartest way to play the space. And we believe that Altus Strategies offers the exact model that investors should be investing in, but also because the management team have a 20% stake in the business, that they're aligning their interests with management. So it's the right model at the right time with the right team.
Excellent stuff, Stephen. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. Been a pleasure.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, it's Roslyn Data Technologies, and of course, I just had Roger on the podcast there. At four, BWA Group. At three, President Energy. At two, Gfinity. Biggest riser yesterday, and it would have been there, but apart from Boohoo, it's taking the top spot. Of course, it's taking a massive knock, Boohoo, which is the darling of AIM, from all the sort of claims that they've had modern slavery going on, producing some of the clothes from the suppliers. So they're looking into that, of course. So that's knocked the share price a bit. Of course, the biggest theme these days amongst institutional investors is ESG, environmental, social, and corporate governance, which is a big theme there. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows, or most read as well, the combination of the two. At five, it's Thor Mining, vanadium field sampling results. At four, Braveheart Investment Group, further Re-Parapetec Limited. At three, Ferrexpo, production report for Q2 2020. At two, Argo Blockchain Mining, as June operational update. And at one, it's Open Orphan, additional laboratory services contract signed. That's just down a smidge there, just under 1% to 11.4 pence. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.